something that I think a lot of people need to hear, and I think it's something that everybody, like, you walk out of that theater when you watch the movie, the same thing with the documentary when we watched it, it just makes you want to be a better person.
100%.
It just makes you want to go out and just try to improve the life of just somebody, like anybody that you can, every day.
The Epic Film Guys Podcast.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Epic Film Guys Podcast. We are here to drop some sweet, sweet movie reviews on you. Yes, not one, but two full reviews, ladies and gentlemen. And I, of course, am Nick.
And I am Justin. And like Nick said, not one, but two reviews. We actually saw a bunch of movies recently, and we're going to talk about them because that's what we do. We are the Epic, in film? Parentheses, film guys.
Once in
and
a
that's
while.
When we're not talking about, well, naughty things.
Naughty
bad
things.
Bad things.
You must be talking about that other guy that's usually on the show.
He's not here. But, I mean, considering that it is the season to not be naughty and to be nice, I'm in the holiday spirit right now. I'm feeling the Christmas spirit already. I'm already taking my time and sitting around and watching vintage 1990s Christmas commercials and feeling nostalgic for the season. So, yes. We shouldn't be too naughty or we won't get any gifts for Christmas.
Now you're going to die.
Wow.
Or that will happen too.
We're jumping right to that.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with Lois House when he's mad. He gets vicious. But that's right, Nick. We saw two movies, and we're going to talk about both of them. A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood and Rian Johnson's Knives Out.
That is right. So we're going to do A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood first. So, I mean, if you live under a rock and you don't know what this film is, like the contestants on Jeopardy that didn't know Tom Hanks was in the movie. After Alex Trebek showed them a clip of Tom Hanks in the movie. did you ever see that clip floating around?
Did he disappear into the role that much where they didn't notice that it was Tom Hanks?
I don't know. But, so this is based on an article that was written by Tom Junod, who was a journalist for Esquire magazine back in 1998, called Can You Say Hero, about Mr. Rogers. And this is basically inspired by that. And I think it, like, the whole kind of fictional story of the journalist that it creates, who is Lloyd Vogel is his name in the film, played by Matthew Rice.
There you go.
So, and of course, Tom Hanks starring as Mr. Rogers. And let's kick it right out of the gate here, Justin. Let's get into your initial thoughts about this. We are not going to be building the wall on this one, ladies and gentlemen. This is, you know, it's a movie about Mr. Rogers. I mean, there's no spoilers in this thing. The movie doesn't have any like plot twists or anything. It unfolds pretty much how you expect it to unfold. So, Justin, lay it on us, baby. What did you think of A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood?
Like we said, I think it was about a year or so ago when Won't You Be My Neighbor came out. We kind of, you know, cleared the room and said, is there a point in doing a biopic about Mr. Rogers? I mean, what more can be said than what was already said in that beautiful, amazing documentary that should have been nominated for an Oscar, but was completely ignored.
Mysteriously.
That documentary literally blew our minds. I loved it. It was my favorite of the year. And
it was my number two film of last year.
Yeah. Made me feel uplifted. And well, I remember when we talked about that, when we did our best of list, I totally forgot about the documentary by that point. And I was probably drunk too. So that's my, you know, whatever. That's my excuse. Whatever. But what this movie does is it actually goes down a different path than a typical biopic. And I appreciate it for that reason.
Well, it's not really, to be fair, to jump in on that, it's not really a biopic because it's not
exactly
a biography of Fred Rogers. This basically is Lloyd's story. This is a story about Lloyd and just kind of how his character comes into Mr. Rogers' orbit. And the film, it takes like a lot of different stories and a lot of different things about Mr. Rogers, like over his history, a lot of different Mr. Rogers' things, and it coalesces them into this thing, because the film, instead of being a bio about Fred Rogers, instead ends up being a film about kind of Fred Rogers' message, like kind of Fred Rogers, like how he viewed the world, like how he treated the world and how he would like everybody out there to treat the world. At least that's definitely what I walk away from it from. It's definitely not a biopic. Like, you're not going into this learn about Mr. Rogers. You're really not.
I mean, that's my initial takeaway, is they made the right choice in not doing that for more than one reason. I mean, number one, the documentary, you'll never beat that. Number two, I don't see a biopic, a straight up, beat by beat biopic about Mr. Rogers being all that compelling in the first place. You need some kind of conflict
in the film. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if it's about Mr. Rogers.
Exactly. So, I mean, I liked the route they took with this, and I'm going to come out and say what everyone already fucking knows, but Tom Hanks was absolutely magnetic in his performance and as Fred Rogers. He put as much effort as he possibly could. I took some time, Nick, and I listened to a handful of interviews. He did the morning show, a couple of other things. He spent a lot of time with Fred Rogers' wife, his widow, who's still alive today. He did a lot of research, just like he always does whenever he's playing a person that actually existed in real life. He was wearing some of Fred Rogers' real ties when he's wearing his outfits. I mean, he got about as close as he possibly could, but he wasn't mimicking Fred Rogers. I didn't see him trying to clown out and be Mr. Rogers. He brought his aura to him. He felt it, and we felt it through him. It wasn't like, you know what I mean? That's the kind of performance that he gave here. It wasn't him trying to, he didn't try to nail every mannerism or every little twitch or blink of an eye. I mean, but he captured him perfectly, I think.
Well, and he captures, the good thing about the film is he captures just that good, warm-hearted essence that you get when you watch and you listen to Mr. Rogers and you see the different things and you hear him talk and you hear like the things that he would say and how infinitely patient he was and how kind and just generous he was with his time to everybody and like how good of a person he was. Hanks captures that perfectly, and he conveys that on the screen. And when this film was first announced, that was my one big concern. I was like, it's Tom Hanks, and we know he's Tom Hanks, but like, are they going to be able to take just that immediate warmth? Like, when he's on screen as Mr. Rogers, you feel that warmth that you feel whenever you watch Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, whenever you see Fred Rogers in interviews or whatever the case may be. He definitely captures that in this film. And I want to, like, right out of the gate here, they kind of frame this movie as like a long form episode almost of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. They use like the little play sets and everything, the little miniature sets and everything from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood as like scene transitions and stuff. I thought that was absolutely brilliant. I absolutely loved that. It really keeps you immersed in that really, really lighthearted tone, which is very well contrasted by everything that's going on in Lloyd's life.
Right, which is way darker than I expected it would go. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's how you get conflict into this film, like we mentioned. And it brings in Chris Cooper playing his father, and I adore Chris Cooper. One of the best fucking actors. Like,
how fucking good
is he? I don't see him in anything anymore.
I was literally about to say that to you. I don't mean to cut you off or anything, but when he showed up, I was like, damn, I haven't seen him in anything in a long time. And then by the end of the movie, I was like, God damn, he's fucking amazing. He really is a great actor. He gives a great performance. He only has a small part in the film, I'd say. I mean, his character is a large part in the movie, but you don't see him a lot in throughout the movie. But when you do, he's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Such a huge impact. But as you just said there, not to go back to the opening or anything, but I loved the opening of this movie. It immersed me immediately. It captured that essence of what the show meant to me as a small child. And I have to throw a huge shout out to Destruction in Human Form, Jared Taylor, because he commented on my post when I posted on social media that I was watching it. He's like, I'm probably going to weep. And I'm like, I cried within the first 10 minutes.
There isn't probably about it.
I mean, I legit cried within the first 10 minutes the same way that I cried within the first 10 minutes of the documentary. And that's how I knew it got me. That's how it had to grab me immediately at the forefront, and that's what it did.
Yeah, no, I legitimately probably cried through half of the runtime of this fucking movie. It's just, you know, there's just something, and to get away from the character necessarily that Hanks is playing, but just about Fred Rogers as a person and the way that they take all these different stories. And if you've never read the article, I actually posted it to social media. I came right home from the movie. I wanted to read the article. You can find it online. Just Google, you know, can you say hero, Esquire, Mr. Rogers, Esquire, whatever, Google it and read the article. It is a long read. Like, they talk about how long it is, like the article that he ends up reading, but holy shit, is it good. And it basically takes all these different things inspired by Fred Rogers, not necessarily that happened to this reporter or to this specific character, but like it, even the article had me in tears. Like it's just like such a pure and amazing force for good that this man was. And what it does is it uses that to weave this thread through Lloyd's life to like teach him how to deal with his emotions, to teach him how to let go of things, to teach him how to forgive and deal with emotions like anger and hatred, all the things that Mr. Rogers used to teach to children. And, you know, there's one particular scene in the movie that, I mean, especially if you've ever seen Mr. Rogers when he won the Lifetime Acceptance Award at the Emmys. He goes up on stage, and when he gets up on stage, he gets up there, and all he does is he just tells the audience to just sit with him quietly for 10 seconds and think about all the people that love them, you know? And they recreate this in the movie in just one of the best scenes that I've seen all fucking year. And, you know, he just tells them, and he sits down in the diner. He's just like, just sit with me and just think about all the people that have loved you into being. And they start this shot and everybody in the diner, like everything goes fucking completely quiet. And then they just do the most brilliant thing of Hanks just turns from Lloyd and just looks directly into the camera. And it's dead fucking silent, like legitimately dead fucking silent. It's so fucking powerful, but that's Fred Rogers. That's how powerful, like the force of his just love and affection for people, for children, for just, you know, not shying away from things that are hard to deal with and not shying away from things that are tough to deal with. It's so, 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 so beautiful. As a film itself, like in terms of the plot, nothing, like I said, nothing happens that you don't expect, but you're not in this for the story. You're not in this for the plot. You're in this to feel that warmth, to feel that positivity, to feel that love from Mr. Rogers. And Jesus Lord, do you feel it? It's amazing. Oh,
you do. And I mean, I saw this quote from Pete Hammond from Deadline that said, "The movie we need right now." And I actually couldn't agree more. We mentioned the same thing when the documentary hit. And I think that the movie was necessary. I think the movie is just pushing that agenda even further, because when we talked about the documentary, Nick, I think we even asked the question, who out there is trying to have the same impact, or who out there is even having remotely the, you know, a close impact that Fred had to today's youth? They don't. Now, Fred Rogers, his stuff is still available. You could watch it on Amazon. I was looking it up earlier and starting to watch through old episodes and stuff, and more or less listen while I'm working. But I mean, I grew up watching it, and something interesting came out of Tom Hanks's interviews doing press for the movie. He said, Fred Rogers, his show was for children. It wasn't for adults. But I slightly disagree in that way, because even as an adult, yes, some of it is very silly. He's talking to children. He's talking to you like he's talking to a child, but he never ever disrespected the child or talked down to the child or was condescending to the child. He talked to them like he cared about them, no matter who they were, and that he understood them and what they were going through, what they were thinking. And that's something that is like so fucking lost in today's social climate. It's so beyond me. I mean, it's in the trailer, Nick, but when Lloyd Vogel is still trying to get all the information for his article on Fred Rogers, and they're on the subway, and they're on their way to Mr. Rogers' apartment in New York City, when the group of children start singing the theme song, and then the entire subway starts singing it together, the cynical person in me would be like, that would never happen. But because it's Mr. Rogers and knowing the power of who he was, I can actually see that happening. And I could see how powerful a moment that would be to be in that spot with all those people at that time.
And it's funny you mentioned that too, because that is actually something that is pulled directly from the article that Tom wrote. That actually did happen. That was something that actually happened. So, you know, and it's funny because you read through, especially if you've seen the movie, you read through the article and there's a lot of quotes and there's a lot of different scenarios and a lot of different just stories about Fred Rogers that they literally adapted it straight over to the screen, you know, which, like I said, it's a testament to like the universality, I think that's not a word, of his message, where you all just
look at Nick, you're making up words already.
You're just putting out good into the world. And that's what Mr. Rogers, I think, wanted to do, is treat everybody with respect, treat everybody with kindness, put goodness and love and affection out in the world. Learn how to deal with your negative emotions. Just learn how to deal with them a way where you're not hurting yourself or hurting somebody else. Learn how to forgive people. Learn how to let go of things. And it's I want to say profound. I don't necessarily think it's profound, because I just kind of try to apply that to my own life anyway and kind of feel that way anyway in life. But it's something that I think a lot of people need to hear. And I think it's something that everybody, like, you walk out of that theater when you've watched the movie, the same thing with the documentary when we watched it, it just makes you want to be a better person.
100%. It
just makes you want to go out and just try to improve the life of just somebody, like anybody that you can, every day. That's all the movie aims to do. And I'm stamping a rating on it right now. It's 9 out of 10 for me. I absolutely fucking loved it.
Wow.
And like I said, I literally sobbed through like half of the fucking movie. I was just like fucking pouring buckets, man. Pouring buckets the whole time in the theater. Hanks is amazing, like you said. Matthew Reese is good. He's really good in the film. I didn't dislike his performance. He's kind of closed off emotionally, but the film opens that up and the film explores that in terms of his character arc. So I really, really appreciated that. And yeah, Cooper, I wouldn't be surprised, honestly. I mean, Hanks is going to get nominated. We know he is. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Cooper pick up a Best Supporting for this, because he's Chris Cooper anyway. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him pick up a Best Supporting, because he's fantastic in the film. Absolutely fantastic. Yeah, 9 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, he's amazing. And because we're doing a really quick review of this movie, I'm not going to go so deep. But I mean, I have to say, Nick, that I related so much to a lot of how Lloyd Vogel's character is written in the movie. I mean, he's estranged from his father. His father left his mother and his family when his mother was dying in the hospital, and he was at a very young age. He's bitter. He just had a new baby, but he doesn't know how to really relate to that at that point in his life. He's a writer who's very cynical. Which all of that shows in his writing. So there's all these different themes of, you know, family and death and all the things that Mr. Rogers never shied away from on his show. He talked to children about death. He talked to children about divorce. He talked to children about facing their fears and that it's okay to cry and all these things that at the time no one else would talk to children about. They'd always just hide it and hopefully, you know, pull the blinds over their eyes and hopefully that would go away. But in this case, like, me personally, as a human being, I don't talk about it much on the show, but I don't really know my real father. He left me at a very young age, like very small. I've been bitter about it my whole entire life. And this movie actually led me down a mental path of thinking about possibly revisiting, you know, what I should do about those feelings. And maybe if I want to reconnect something in my life that hasn't been there for the past 20 some years. I mean, the movie really opened me up a lot to a lot of themes that honestly, Nick, I didn't expect it would. I thought it'd be like almost like not a fluff piece, if you will, but something that would just feel good type movie. And the movie goes dark. And when it deals with death and deals with the divorce and deals with anger, you know, it does it in a very realistic way. And I have to give all of that, all the credit to Mariel Heller, who directed the movie, who did a brilliant job with this.
Fantastic direction in this film. Yeah,
I mean, you have that Tom Hanks performance, but you wouldn't have it as well as you do without that direction there. So for me, I'm not quite as high on it as you were. I think that in the middle of it, it slowed down a little bit for me. And I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, whenever Hanks was on screen, I was completely just my face was just stuck to it. Like I could not get my eyes off the screen. But anytime that he wasn't there, I mean, I cared about the Lloyd Vogel character, but I wasn't as enthused as I thought I would be.
Yeah, he's not quite the magnetic character, you know, to hold the movie whenever Mr. Rogers isn't on screen. But I think what bolsters that for me especially is the kind of the aura of Fred Rogers, I think, really hangs over the entire film. So
it does. Yeah, it definitely does.
You still get that feeling, even though you're obviously dealing with those darker scenes. And just Susan Kalichi Watson, she plays Beth in This Is Us. If you watch This Is Us, that's where you probably know her from. But she's also great in the film. I absolutely loved her performance as well. Just a wonderful, super fun, emotional thing. But you were going to get to your rating.
But yeah, like I said, even though I related to a lot of Lloyd's character and his performance is fantastic. I mean, it's very, very good. I'm going to give the movie an 8 out of 10. I think it was a really, really, really good movie. I would definitely watch it again for all the reasons that we stated above. It didn't blow me away, but it's still so, so good. I mean, there's a reason why most critics out there are loving the shit out of this movie, because it's really fucking good. And I can't see anybody else in the role of Fred Rogers as, you know, other than Tom Hanks. He put all of his effort into it. And it, I mean, when doesn't he? I mean, has Tom Hanks ever given a bad performance?
I don't think of.
No, not even in Turner and Hooch, baby. He's great in fucking Turner and Hooch. He yells at that dog with passion. You stupid dog. See, just saying. Love you, Tom. 8 out of 10 for me.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. And we are going to roll into a really quick break here. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about Rian Johnson's Knives Out. Who done it, Justin? A murder mystery. We're going to talk about it right after this. What's up, everybody? This is Nick, and I just want to let you know, if you're not already a member over on the EFG Patreon, you got to sign up. For just $1 a month, you get access to pre-roll, whenever we record it, that is, and loot tiers. Up at the higher tiers, you get stickers, custom swag, Loy socks, ladies and gentlemen. Do you want a sock with Loy Sauce's face on it? You're going to get one at the $5 level or above. Loot boxes twice a year, and every month, 10% of our Patreon donations go to charity. That and so, so, so much extra content, including the EFG Nick and I series with Paul from The Countdown and all sorts of other random nonsense recordings that just happen to find their way up there. Check out this clip and we would really, really appreciate it. The show will always be free, this show that you're listening to, but helping us out on Patreon is just another way that you can get extra content and help keep the EFG dream alive and help keep everything rolling. And plus, I mean, we got to pay for the dumpster that the Hopester lives in. I mean, that thing's not cheap. All right. So whatever you can do to help us ease that burden, we would really, really appreciate it. But we love you. We love each and every one of you out there, whether you support us on Patreon or not, but we would really, really appreciate the extra help. But I'm going to shut up now. So please enjoy this exclusive clip from one of our Patreon specials, and we'll see you at the movies. Why is this one of my favorite movies, I think, is... Yeah.
How did you come to it, Nick? What was your experience with it to start?
I didn't see it in a theater, because I was like 14 when this came out, because this was, what, 94? 94 or 95, somewhere around there?
And yep, July 15th, 1994. 25-year anniversary. And thanks, James Cameron, for not releasing the Blu-ray to commemorate that.
Yeah, thanks, James Cameron, for never doing a sequel to this movie. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about untapped potential for this, especially this film, because this film is, not only is it really investing, I think the characters are really, really well-rounded, except, you know, I mean, some of the more fringe characters are not so much, but I think especially the Tasker family is really, really well-rounded. Well, maybe not Dana, but
yeah,
nonetheless.
The parents.
Nonetheless, it's got amazing comedy. Tom Arnold is just hilarious in this movie. Bill Paxton, as we've already talked about, we're going to talk about more. And it's got the sexiness with just Jamie Lee Curtis just absolutely just owning it. Just, we'll get there.
Tia Carrere, not looking pretty fine as well.
Yes, absolutely. And it's got some of the best action ever put to... Like, I'm watching this scene today, and it's toward the end of the movie when the Harrier comes in and they just blow the pillars out of the bridge, mm-hmm. and the van flips up in the air. I just like, even seeing it again, and I haven't watched this movie in quite some time, but even seeing it again, like 25 years later, after its release, still mind blowing. Just incredible action sequences. I don't really know how to break down these films anything of that nature, but I mean, where do you fit in on this film, Paul?
Oh, as implied slash stated, with a hard love. But this would be, I don't think it's going too far, so this would be my top 50 films of all time. So it's just a thrilling ride from start to finish. It has a perfect balance, I think, of action, as you say, first and foremost, and then some great comedy, because this was probably the last great Arnold Schwarzenegger film, I reckon. He had some okay ones after this, but this is the end of his dominant era.
Oh, we're not counting Terminator Genesis in there. Oh, okay. Sorry. I just...
Maybe not.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you so much for sticking with us here on the Epic Film Guys podcast. If you like us, if you love us, if you just want Loy Sauce to whisper sweet nothings into your ear.
Now you're going to die.
You want to suck your dick.
Or that, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. He doesn't pull down your trousers for any less than 5 stars, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, my Lord. But ladies and gentlemen, we are spinning over into our second feature review for the week. And that, of course, is Rian Johnson's murder mystery, Knives Out. And Justin, before you even say a single word, it's going up, baby.
Build that wall. Build that wall. Build that wall. Build
how
that
the hell
wall.
We gonna,
none of your spoilers.
How are we going to talk about this movie without spoilers?
No spoilers at the top of the proceedings here. So essentially, ladies and gentlemen, to drop a little bit of knowledge on you about what it's all about. The Thrombey family gathers to celebrate Harlan Thrombey's 85th birthday, and he ends up dead. And then Daniel Craig has to come in and try to figure out who killed Harlan Thrombey. Justin, I'm booting it right over to you, baby. No spoilers. Trump's going to come in here. He'll smack you. What did you think of Knives Out?
Well, considering the fact that I drank like 4 or 5 whiskey drinks before I saw it, that may or may not have affected my opinion on the movie, but I was extremely excited for this movie. I mean, literally, the cast alone, when you look at it on paper, then you watch the trailers, when you see these people in action, the caliber of acting in this movie, just the chemistry and everything, I mean, I just... It knocked my fucking socks off. And of course, y'all know what I'm going to say. Y'all know who I love.
Oh, no.
She's my girl, oh, Jamie no. Lee Curtis.
Oh, my
and
God.
To see her, you know, again, the fact that she's kind of back in the mix with bigger movies, you know, or, you know, and working with good names after the 2018's Halloween reboot, sequel, whatever the fuck. It's a sequel. Yes, but it's also a reboot, whatever you want to call it. It was awesome to see her get cast in a movie directed by Rian Johnson with such an amazing cast. Second to that, me being the gigantic Miami Vice fan that I am,
oh,
it
God.
Being my favorite oh, show God. Of all time, and having Sonny Crockett himself, Don Johnson, being in the movie, playing Jamie Lee Curtis's husband. I mean, and then Man. Chris Evans is playing their fucking kid. Caps their kid. What could be cooler than that? Seriously. And it's a movie about someone getting murdered. You don't get murder mysteries anymore, Nick. They
no.
just don't happen.
No.
It's not a thing. And I'm honestly, you know, I'm sick of hearing people compare this to Clue. There are other murder mysteries other than Clue. And yes, this is quirky in parts, and I can see where people would compare it to Clue. A friend of mine actually saw this movie, I think it was South by Southwest a few months ago. And during the Q&A, someone actually stood up and asked Rian Johnson, what's it like to remake Clue? I don't know if they're trying to be witty or funny, but I mean, it's not the same movie. And Nick, you've never even seen Clue, right?
No, I have not.
I liked this movie so much. I was extremely entertained by it. While not as intensely exciting as I thought it was going to be, there are enough twists and turns to satisfy my needs. I kind of pictured it this way, Nick. Say we're at the amusement park and you're standing in front of the second tallest roller coaster in the park. Your view, you can see the biggest roller coaster at the park, but you're going to ride the second biggest. It's still thrilling. There's still tons of twists and turns, and you still walk away totally excited about your experience, and you had a fucking blast. But you know that that taller roller coaster was probably going to be better and more exciting. But you still walk away satisfied. That's how I viewed Knives Out.
Interesting. Interesting. All right, well, I fucking love this movie. And it's got some issues, and we're going to have to get into those in the back half of the episode in spoilers, ladies and gentlemen, because there's no way to talk about the plot of this film without spoiling anything about it. So we're basically going to keep this pretty much confined to the performances. And aside from Justin already mentioning Jamie Lee Curtis, Don Johnson, and Chris Evans, you've got Daniel Craig is so deliciously like chewing so much scenery in this movie. Absolutely love him. Ana de Armas is just so, so good in this. Toni Collette, incredible in this film. Lakeith Stanfield, excellent in this film. Christopher Plummer as Harlan, excellent performance. Michael Shannon, who I absolutely adore, just excellent in the film. The entire cast in this film is absolutely knocking it out of the park. And I'm going to say it, like, murder mystery aside, plot of the movie aside, this is probably the funniest fucking movie you will see in theaters this year. It's so fucking funny. It's hilarious. I couldn't believe it.
How do we not know? Why did they not market this movie as being funny? Because the trailers don't really give you that. I could not believe it. It was so unexpectedly funny. I was laughing every fucking other minute.
Yeah.
I could not believe it. Like, hilarious. I had no idea.
It's and like the murder mystery aspect of it aside, like I said, we'll get to that. But the performances are all so good. Everybody so immersed in their characters. You never question any of it for a second. He does throw a lot of different details at you about all of these different characters. So you really get to flesh, like, pretty much every single character in this film gets pretty well fleshed out. Like, you know, you get like different scenes, like their different relationships, their familiar relationship. And I think the greatest thing that Johnson does in this film, the Thrombys really feel like a great dysfunctional family. Love, love, love that aspect about it. There's never a second in this film where you don't really question that. Like, you just feel like this is a family that has all this different drama between each other, all these different problems, all this different stuff. It's the by far the film's best asset. If you give this film a subpar cast, this film isn't nearly as good. The cast sells this thing so, so well. Absolutely knocks out of the park. Who do you think, Justin, was probably your favorite performance in the film, if you had to pick one?
Honestly, that's a very difficult question, and I didn't even really think of that. I mean, of course, I want to give a lot of love to my girl, Jamie Lee Curtis, but to be honest with you, you know, she's got a lot to do, but she's not at the forefront as much as some of the others. That's such a difficult decision to make, but you're totally right in the fact that James Bond himself, Daniel Craig, chews scenery like a motherfucker in this
Sweet
thing.
Sweet Jesus, man.
And he's so much fun to watch. That southern accent that he put on, like, I don't think Danielle, my wife, I don't think she knew when we sat down. She'd seen the trailers, but I think maybe she forgot. She's like, oh, he's going to be southern in this? And then like half an hour in, I'm watching her watch him on the big screen, and she's laughing her ass off at him. I mean, he's... Yeah. Just give that, this guy some, seriously,
that long,
Nick,
slow southern drawl, that Kentucky accent that he's going for. It's so fucking good. And it definitely keeps proceedings light. Like, there's a lot of different serious little things going on around you, but it definitely keeps the atmosphere of the film light. And man, I don't know if he's my favorite performance in the film necessarily, because man, Chris Evans is fucking gold in this movie.
Chris Evans is good. I think the awesome thing about this is seeing so many different actors do something we've never seen them do before. I've never seen Toni Collette play an Instagram influencer. You know, I mean, Christopher Plummer, he's played similar type of characters. But with Chris Evans, Michael Shannon even,
Michael
and Don
Shannon's
Johnson.
So fucking good in this movie.
They're, I I can't pick, to be honest with you. You'll have to come back to me. I'm going to watch this a second time for sure. That's Man. Definitely going to happen for me. But there's no way I can pick a favorite performance right off the top of my head. They're all so good, and I love them all so, so much.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how good the cast in this movie is. 100% a recommendation from both of us, I think, to go see this movie. Please go see this movie. I mean, I got to tell a quick story, Justin, and then we're going to go ahead and tear down that wall. Yeah,
let's hear it. It was a
special early release screening that I got to see. And Rian Johnson comes on the screen, and he gives like a little presentation before the movie. He's like, oh, everybody got a poster when they walked into the theater. So everybody pull out your posters and take a look at the back. And if you look at the back of your poster and you have a sticker on it, you win a special prize. Take it to guest services and you get a special prize. Okay. And super, super huge shout out. I didn't see this film alone, Justin. I got to see it with one of our patrons, a really, really good friend of both of ours.
The Flash.
The running man himself, Scott LeVar, joined me at the theater for this. I had an absolute blast hanging out with Scott. Thank you so much for coming out, Scott. But we're all sitting in the theater. The theater was packed, jam-packed for this. And we're all sitting there in the theater, and he's on the screen. He's like, take a look at the back of your poster, and if you got the sticker, take it to guest services, and, you know, you get a special prize packet. Everybody's looking around at everybody else like, what the fuck are you talking about? What poster? Nobody got any posters. Like, what are you talking about? So the movie ends. And Scott and I are outside just, you know, bullshitting for a little bit. I had to get home to record the 2018 in film retrospective. But we see a couple people walking out of the theater holding posters. And we're like, are those the Knives Out posters? And they're like, oh, yeah, they're over on the manager's desk. You got to go grab one. And so Scott and I went back inside, and there's just literally a pile of them thrown on the manager's desk. Just a pile of Knives Out posters just sitting there. And I'm like, you know, and like they looked all shuffled up and stuff like that. And Scott was like, yeah, somebody came through here and was flipping through them to try to find the one with the sticker on the back of it, which I'm absolutely sure that is what happened. But yeah, I did get a Knives Out poster proudly being displayed behind me right now. And yeah, it was just that's my theater, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm not surprised in the least bit. That sounds like AMC Vestal to me. I mean, because they're not used to that kind of thing. They're like, what? Giving away posters for a screening beforehand? How dare they? Like, they don't want to do any extra work at that fucking theater. It was the funniest thing,
just everybody turning around to everybody else in the theater. Like, I'm holding up an imaginary poster in front of myself. Like, I'm like, I don't see it, you know.
But did you find out what the prize pack was, though?
No, I never did find out what the prize pack was, unfortunately. Dude. So, yeah, but ladies and gentlemen, we are going to go ahead and we're going to tear down that wall because there is so much to dissect plot-wise for this movie. We're going to get into it right after this.
Tear down this wall. Tear it down.
Knock it down. Get it out of here.
Reagan smash. Reagan smash.
So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. If you have not seen Knives Out, we are going to spoil the ever-loving shit out of it from here forward. So you have been thoroughly warned. Justin, what did you think specifically of the murder mystery aspect of this film?
Well, to be honest with you, Nick, I saw that shit a mile away. That's probably the only main issue.
So which shit? Because there's a few different things to dissect there.
Well, I mean, okay. So as soon as they introduced an outside character that's not part of the main family, which is Marta, which is Harlan's nurse and caretaker, who had a very close friendship and relationship with him, I immediately focused all of my attention onto that character. And the movie does something very specific. It does a Hitchcock, if you will. Those familiar with Hitchcock's formula knew that what Hitchcock would do is if there is going to be an explosion, he would show you the bomb, he would show you where the bomb was, and then you as the audience member have to wait in anticipation. That's the suspense time for you to see when it's going to blow, if it's going to blow, and what's going to happen to the people around it. In this case, very early on, we find out that it wasn't a murder that killed Harlan. It was a mistake. Or was it a deliberate mistake that caused Harlan to kill himself? But Marta, at the center of the movie, is the one that doesn't really know yet that it was a mistake, and she thinks it was on her that she made the bad decision that caused the death. So we're led to believe that she is the killer, in a sense. However, I knew, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, dude, and I didn't read spoilers or anything, but I knew who caused it the entire time. It, for me, it wasn't, there was no way around it. I just looked at all the other characters. I looked at how they are being portrayed. I looked at all the characteristics, and I couldn't see any of them possibly being the one directly involved.
So I mean, basically what ends up happening in the murder mystery is they reveal this really early on. I think it's like the end of the first act almost is when we find out that he killed himself. And then we learn the circumstances of that because we get all sorts of different flashbacks to the actual party peppered in throughout the investigation that Daniel Craig's character and the police are doing. And do you feel like that reveal was maybe a little bit too early in the film?
I think it was definitely too early in the film. But and as soon as it happened, I was a little bit disappointed. I was like, oh, you're going to give that to me this early. But like I said, it is Rian Johnson's very well versed in the world of suspense filmmaking. He knows what a Hitchcock is. And I call it that because a lot of other filmmakers call it that. You give the audience that tasty morsel and let them, you know,
I think the problem with revealing it that early in the film, because I had problems with them revealing that early. Obviously, there's still like an hour and a half of movie left, and it's not all just going to be like this thriller about like her trying to, you know, figure out how to cover the tracks and her trying to figure out how to get away with this whole thing and all this other different stuff that's going on. It's like there's more to this, and that ends up being like the real mystery of the film is not necessarily like how he dies, but, you know, the circumstances that led to his, like, you know, because I knew, like, when she was doing and she was doing the injections and she was doing the different medicine because she gives him injections of medicine every night. As soon as that happened, like, I guessed that pretty early. I guess pretty much I was like, the medicines were switched. I bet you anything, like, the medicines were switched or something like that, because somebody was really trying to kill him and maybe she, you know, didn't really kill him or whatever. I guessed that part pretty on. I didn't peg who actually switched the medicines. I was like, in a murder mystery, the best way to go about it is like literally make it so it could have been anybody.
Like, well, exactly. That's how they want you to think that. And the red herring is always the person that's not there, who's mentioned, who leaves, and then everyone else is still there. So I was like, well, is he going to be the red herring or is he going? He's either one or the other. And we're talking about Ransom, which is Chris Evans' character.
Yeah.
His name gives it the fuck away, in my opinion, because, I mean, let's face it, he basically threatens his grandfather, you know, you can't cut me off. In the movie, at this point in time, the whole family is under the understanding that he's basically going to cut a lot of them off.
All of them.
He's made the decision.
All of them.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. All of them. He's cutting them all off. He's not going to help them anymore. He's not going to be their financial stability anymore. And Ransom's the one that has the argument with him, rushes out, and the rest of the family stays for the rest of the party. He goes upstairs, he plays his game, and that's when the situation happens where it causes his death. But like I said, Chris Evans' character, Ransom, he's either the red herring or he's the part of the killing, I mean, in this type of movie. And it was, I just saw it coming a mile away where nothing in the film, Nick, surprised me.
I think the thing, and I was thinking about this because I think one of the best thing about a good murder mystery is going back through after you've watched it the first time, after you know what happens, and going back through and picking out all the little clues and all the little details that you missed the first time through. And I think what Johnson does, I think the one mistake that this film makes is it kind of gives you all that the first time through. I don't necessarily, outside of just as a straight up comedy, because this film is hilarious and all the performances are excellent, but
100%.
I think in terms of like the murder mystery aspect of it, like, I don't think I would be that invested in a rewatch, like, because it gives you pretty much every little detail the first time through. There's not you're not going to go back and you're not going to see like all sorts of different little bits and bobs that you necessarily wouldn't have noticed the first time through.
But my question to you is, do you think that Rian Johnson did that deliberately Like, because that's what I was questioning after I watched it.
He had to have done it deliberately. He had to have. And I think maybe it's him kind of taking the murder mystery genre and maybe flipping that idea of it on his head a little bit, because he doesn't necessarily want, you know, it's more about the characters and it's more about, you know, the relationship between Marta and Harlan. And it's more about, you know, the interplay between the family and the family dramas and the family dynamics. That's what makes this movie. That's the best aspect of this film.
Well, because I was going to say, I mean, because the tension that would normally be placed on the whodunit and you're still waiting to find out is actually placed on Daniel Craig's Detective Benoit Blanc. And the fact that Marta knows that she helped cause it and that she knows that he's on her tail and he's using her because he wants her to help. That's where the tension lies. That's where the suspense lies. Is as a viewer, you're like, okay, yeah. Well, we know this is how he died. Did someone help cause it? Is he going to find out? And is she going to get in trouble? Because obviously we're supposed to care about her. She's the person that came from, you know, her mother is not in the country legally. Something bad could happen to her. The rest of the family is all rich, and all they're worried about is losing their fucking goody-goody, you know, their trust fund or their money or their, you know, their career based on their dad or their grandfather. In this case, we were supposed to care about Marta, which I did care about her, but the focus of the suspense is just in a different place than it would normally be for a suspense thriller.
Yeah, normally it would be... In a murder mystery, normally everything, the focus would be on the plot and not so much the characters and all the different little mystery aspects of it. And this film definitely flips that idea on its head. It's not as much about the murder mystery plot as the murder mystery plot is a vehicle to tell these characters' stories, as opposed to the characters, you know, being the vehicle to tell this murder mystery story, if that makes sense. He flips that idea on its head, and that's what he does with it. And I think that that's the film's biggest... I think it lags a little bit, especially in the middle act when you're doing the suspense thing, because it's not like I don't care about Marta as a character. I love Ana de Armas in this film. She gives an amazing performance, and I really do like the character. I thought the running joke about, like, none of the family knows where she's from. You know, they all give different countries when they're being interviewed, like, different countries that they think
she's
from.
That's why a few minutes ago I got a blank there. I went blank, yeah, because I forgot, because they all mentioned a different place.
Because none of them, you know, really, I mean, they love her and consider her
family.
They
say she's like
family,
yeah, but
they
don't know.
But none of them really, they only very superficially care about her, because it's like you said, most of them only care about their inheritance and what they're going to get from their grandfather and, you know, of them being upset that they're cut off. And I mean, I like, on one hand, I like Johnson's willingness to do that, to flip that idea and that kind of script on its head. I do appreciate that, but the film starts to lag a little bit for me when the focus is off all of these characters together and all the great scenes that they all share together and all the things they do together, and you're just isolated with, like, one or two of these characters. I think that that's where the film loses a little bit of its steam. It definitely picks up in the third act when it starts wrapping up, like, all of the different loose ends for the mystery and everything. And then she ends up, like, he wrote a new will and gives her everything instead of giving any of his family everything, which, I mean, sadly, the sad thing about all of that is it's never probably going to hold up in court. Like, if you really think about it, like, after the fact, like, you know, they're probably going to hire lawyers that are going to, like, shred that.
But it's a movie.
I know it's a movie. It is one of those things that, like, I was just like, yeah, the family's lawyers are going to tear that thing to shreds. They're going to say that she was like, molesting him or having sex with him or influencing
they insinuate what have you been doing with my father, like, basically, like, you've been
Jamie Lee Curtis's character,
yeah.
She's like, have you been boinking my dad? I fucking died, yeah, laughing at that. Oh yeah. My god,
yeah.
And you get all these little different aspects of each of these different characters. That's the reason to go see this movie, but not so much the murder mystery or the mystery aspect of it. Regardless, that is by far the film's weaker element, but as
maybe
a stage,
just for us though, maybe just for us,
maybe just maybe, for us. But I think, yeah, I think what Johnson does really intelligently is he uses it as a stage to tell the story of these characters. And that's the part of this film that works really well for me. So if you just go into this, just looking for a straight up murder mystery, I don't think you're going to have as much fun with it as you would if you're open to what he does in the film thematically. It did affect my viewing a little bit, but man, you take these performances and you take the it is, I cannot emphasize how fucking funny this film is. I was
dying. 100%.
dying.
I was on the floor, man. And like I said, I had like four or five fucking whiskeys before I sat down to watch this thing, and one during it. And I like I said, they did not market this as being a comedy. I didn't expect it to be a comedy. And when you do compare it to a movie like Clue is very funny, but this has a different kind of humor. And I have to give my hats off to Rian Johnson in more than one way here. Not only did he perfect a new kind of murder mystery, his own kind of murder mystery, but the fact that he was able to juggle all of these amazing actors playing all of these characters that have so much depth in their own stories.
Yeah.
And he did it so well. Like, you cared about each and every one of them in some way, or you wanted to know more about them. There was so much intrigue about who this person was and how they were connected to that person, all their history. And whenever they talked about the past, or whenever they were in that room together, you're totally right, Nick. Those are the most interesting moments for me. I could not wait until those scenes would show up again, where they're all there, because you know it's going to be so good. There was not one single moment in the movie where I was like, oh, they gave a bad performance, or that was a bad line delivery. Yeah. Everyone was fucking on top level.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you just have to go into it with that mindset that that's the aspect of this film that Johnson really cared about. And I think that's what he wants you as the audience to care about. The murder mystery is just a vehicle to tell the stories of these characters. And I mean, just all the little subplots that you get with all these different little characters. Each couple has their own little thing, and each kind of like piece of the family, they all have their own little things that are going on. I love the scenes with all the family is together when they're all fighting and they're all arguing and they're all bickering back and forth. Like, there's scenes where they're arguing about politics in the movie and like doing all these different things. You got somebody on the family that's like more right leaning. You got somebody in the family that's more left leaning, and they're sitting there bickering and arguing back and forth. Like, that stuff is great. And it really grounds this family and makes them feel so fucking real. Like, it really, really brings them to life on the screen. So you're super invested in all of their stories. Super, super invested in all of their stories. You get those wonderful, quiet moments of Marta at home with her mother and her sister. It's just, man, there's so, so much good character work. This is like, especially if you love character building in a film, like I love it. I love character building in a film. It's what always sells a film to me. This film is for you. It absolutely knocks it out of the park. It's like you said, Justin, you care about all of these characters because of how sharp the script is, how great his direction is, and just the impeccable performances of this cast. But I want to shift away from them really quick here and get into another thing, and how beautiful this film is. How gorgeous that house is. That house is a character unto itself in this film. And I know you had another thought there on the cast or whatever, but yeah, I want to get your thoughts
cast, actually. It was how the film opened, but I will actually comment on that right now. I mean, let's just face it. We both love Rian Johnson's filmmaking. Like, we weren't those guys that were shitting on The Last Jedi. We both really liked it a lot. Or loved it. Yeah,
I've never seen Brick, but I loved Looper.
Loisaw screened it a few weeks ago at Film Club, and I unfortunately missed it, but I have seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen Brick, but I mean, obviously he's done he directed a lot of episodes of Breaking Bad and a lot of other television shows. So, I mean, he's got a great pedigree to him. And I mean, he's only going to get better from here, which is the great thing about it.
You're perfectly right, though, in the house being a character, the way that it's shot, any time that you went back to the house, there were so many great, like, overhead shots. There was a dolly shot. Like, I mean, you
yeah, some of the aerial of shots house. That they use, yeah, like, yeah. Of yeah, it being exactly. out in the woods and everything. It's there's a lot of really, really great, and I think he does a really good job too, because he at times, like in the right setting and in the right atmosphere, he makes the house look foreboding and he makes it look creepy, but then at other times it looks very inviting, very warm.
Exactly. You know what I thought, man? You know? I was sitting there with that whiskey in my hand. I'm like, I wish that I could drink this drink in that house,
right?
That I could walk around like and be at that party that they're at and have that drink that they're having and sitting in front of that fireplace like with that family. It just seemed like an amazing thing. The question I wanted to ask you was, because I know you're very specific about how they set up how the story is going to be told, did you like how they basically started telling their stories as they sat down each individual family member, and they started telling their version of the story, and then they would go through their version of the story to connect what actually happened. Because I thought that was very interesting. I thought that was a really awesome way of telling the story. It was, you know, kind of like connecting the dots, if you will, which they'd go through and they'd ask. So they'd ask the family member a question, like Michael Shannon's character. Then he would tell his version of the story, and you'd see it from his perspective. Then they would ask the next family member, and they would just all kind of connect, but they'd all be kind of different.
Yeah, and I love that as well, because you get a lot of unreliable narrator kind of stuff in there, which is a trope that I absolutely love. I love it when films play with that and do it well, because you get to see different scenes like that in the film. Like, there's a couple of different characters. There's a couple of them that tell the story, and there's a flashback to them putting the cake down in front of Harlan, you know? So there's a lot of details, especially at the beginning of the film, that are really murky. And then, you know, you have the characters, at first they don't want to talk bad about each other, but then you immediately cut to another character who immediately starts trashing this character and calling this character into question. And I think in terms of the murder mystery, I think what it does well is it at least sets up good motive for everybody to be really angry with him, to where this is the kind of thing that could have happened. And you could really, especially at the beginning in the first act of the film, that's why I feel like it blows its wad a little bit too early. I feel like you could have moved that reveal way later into the film.
It definitely does, man. I totally agree with that.
We didn't need to see all the flashbacks of him, like, because he's a mystery writer, so he's telling Anna all the great things, or Marta, I should say, all the things to do to try to get away with this. He's giving her all of the different details and et cetera, and then we see him kill himself literally at the end of the first act. I felt like that was, if you move that to later in the film, and you don't know that she knows what she knows, I think that this film becomes a much better film. I'm kind of curious as to why he placed that where he did in the film, because I think if you have that mystery, to think about it another way, maybe if you don't know the answer to that mystery early, you're too concerned about it as an audience member as you're watching the rest of the film unfold, because you're like, but when are we going to find out what happened? Like, I could kind of maybe see his thought process going into it that way. Maybe that's why he leaned that way. I don't know.
Well, for the general audience member, yeah, I think maybe that's why I said earlier, maybe this is just how we're feeling, or maybe, you know, how, you know, a major film lover will feel with this. Needs to, you know, be open to all people, especially regular film goers. This movie needs to do fucking well, and I hope everyone goes to see this
on
Thanksgiving.
I really want it to do well.
This movie is such a blast. I made sure in my Instagram post that I did not reveal anything. I just said, expect a funny ass movie. Like, cause it was unexpectedly funny. Like, we can't, you know, hammer that home enough, where I literally was just on the floor dying laughing. Like, everyone's funny in this. They're letting everyone flex their chops in this thing. And I mean, they do spoon feed a lot of the what happened when, you know, Ransom gets involved with Marta, and, you know, that whole thing starts to get twisty and turny, and they connect the dots. I was like, okay, you know, that works, you know, for the
most
part. You know
what I'd be curious to know is if he ever wrote, or even maybe if he ever shot, like, multiple different scenarios of where it could have been multiple different characters. I wonder if it was always, like, he wrote the script with it was always going to be Ransom, or if he wrote it and then, like, you know, decided that the Ransom route was the best route to take, or if he, like, wrote or even shot scenes where, you know, the real killer is revealed to have been, or who switched the medicine, I should say, is revealed to be A, B, C, or D character, whatever. I'm really curious. I wonder if that's ever a thing. Like, maybe whenever the Blu-ray comes out, or we get more interviews from him about the movie once it's been out for a while, if he's ever going to talk about that or any of that kind of stuff.
That's a really interesting perspective. Yeah. I mean, that's something that I could definitely
that,
see.
Because
he is a filmmaker. I could see him going down that road and being like, maybe I should do it this way, maybe I should do it that way. Because there are plenty of interesting directions they could have gone with that. I mean, like I said, I felt, and this is definitely going to knock a point or two off for me, you know, especially with the way the trailers were. I mean, you're always looking at Chris Evans. You're like, that's Captain America. Like, he's always playing Captain America or the good guy or whatever. And like, you're like, oh, are they going to make him the bad guy? That seems like the easy choice. Let's make him the bad guy, because he never gets to play that. Then he ends up being the bad guy. So it's like, I mean, I knew all along.
It was still really nice to see him play against type, though, especially after all the Avengers stuff. It really was.
He's great. He's amazing. I loved him. I loved everyone in the movie. Like I said, everyone's fucking top notch. I really enjoyed the movie. I'm highly recommending it. It's one of the funnest times I've had at the theater
stamp
all
it,
year.
Put it down. Put the number down, baby. I mean, stamp it.
I hate to mirror the Mr. Rogers movie, but it's also going to get an 8 out of 10 for me. I mean, it could have been a 9. I really wanted it to be a 9. It was almost there for me. But it, you know, that middle part, I agree with you. It lagged a little bit. And the fact that they revealed the Hitchcock, if you will, a little bit too early, I was kind of like, yeah, man, I'm not the general audience member. I'm someone that loves fucking suspense thrillers. I love murder mysteries. I want you to make me wait. I'm that guy that watches fucking Forensic Files and Unsolved Mysteries every night before bed. I want you to build it. Even those shows do it a little bit better than that. Like, make me wait. And then, oh, that's what happened. Yeah. Make it satisfying. Make it like, I was going to say something really sexual, but I'm not going to do that because Loy Sauce isn't here to hear it. And we've talked enough, bad. I'm not going to.
You're not my dad.
No. I shot my wad early. That's how it was. 8 out of 10
That's
for me,
a lot
Nick.
Of cum.
Where did you land on this, baby?
I'm landing right there beside you. 8 out of 10 It's the middle act of this film is pretty laggy, especially if you're going into it expecting, like I said, if you're expecting that murder mystery aspect of this film, you're going to go into this and you're going to be like, whoa, what? Did they just really reveal that? Like, that was kind of my reaction to it. And it took me actually a little bit of time to get back into the film and to get back on board with it. Fortunately, it's the kind of film where it gets you right back along for the ride. But yeah, I feel like the reveal was way too early. But the cast performances in this are so strong. Johnson's writing is so sharp. And it's so, so goddamn funny. You will be laughing from beginning to end. It's amazingly well done. Everything about the movie, like I said, I'd love to hear his thought process. And that's the kind of thing and that's why I don't want to be too harsh on it, because I love that it makes me want to know more about his thought process in writing and crafting and directing the film. Why did he come to these decisions to do these things the way he did? I'd love to hear like a director's commentary for this movie when it comes out of him, like explaining, okay, this is why I decided to do the reveal here. You know, I'd love to hear that kind of stuff. But
and like I said before, man, he had so many characters to juggle and he did it all so brilliantly and wonderfully.
Yeah, so amazing.
I mean, everyone is good in it. There's really nothing to complain about in the long run. It's a very, very good to great fucking movie. And yeah, I really enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, you absolutely will love it, ladies and gentlemen. So please, please, please check out both of these films that we have recommended here for you tonight. You will have a great time and you'll sob your fucking eyes out for Mr. Rogers when you watch that as well. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen, for the regular show. Stay tuned for the Monday-sode. Lots of fun film news.
Monday-sode.
Justin's going to talk about meeting Dan Aykroyd and talk about a whole bunch of other different little banter, film news, a bunch of random stuff to fill out your day. Plus, we got second place in the Discover Pod Awards. Hear all about that. We're going to talk all about finishing second place in there. But we will say for now, thank you all so much, everybody out there who voted for us. We love you. We appreciate all of the amazing support from our fans, supporters, the podcast community, everybody that rallied around us. It was absolutely amazing. But Justin, if people are just checking us out for the first time, if they want to know how to interact with us, if they want to know where they can see a photo of this strange God of Podcasting character that we keep talking about, where can they find us out there?
At Epic Film, guys, we're literally everywhere. We spread our legs for each and every one of you and let you come in as deep as you want, baby.
That's a lot of cum.
Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you name it. We're literally all over the spectrum of social media. And what you want to do, if you really want to get to know us, you want to be a part of the Epic Film, guys, like our Facebook page and join our fan group, the Hopesters Dumpster. That's where we are all the time, 24/7. I literally wake up in the middle of the night at like 3 a.m. and
you
I
like
check
to call
that
me the
like,
Hopester.
Well, that asshole, I hope with Christmas coming, he does not return.
Good night,
God,
everyone.
I'm trying to not drink carbs, and if he does, I don't even know what's going to happen. But yes, join the Hopesters Dumpster. We post tons of updates in there. The Terror Tuesday screenings, our episode updates, literally everything. That's where you want to be. So join that. And as far as listening to the show, we're all over every single podcatcher, epicfilmguys.com, and on Spotify. I know everyone loves Spotify. We're there too.
They beat the living shit out of me.
And I will beat the livid shit out of him if he makes me start drinking beer again.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we super, super appreciate everybody that took out the time to check out the show today. You guys are absolutely amazing. You are why we continue to do this week in, week out. I do apologize. No Monday show this week. It was a rough weekend for me, and we just didn't get anything put together to get that Monday show out. But we're here. We're not going anywhere, baby. We're still here. We're still dumping out all sorts of content for you. We love you. We appreciate you. Thank you so, 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 so much out there, everybody, for listening. And until next time,
we will see you at the movie.